But first, I want to start with that key decision at the Fed, as President Joe Biden is expected to speak on his decision to renominate Fed Chair Jerome Powell at 1:20 p.m. Eastern Time. Of course, the twist there, the other name that we had been discussing as a potential candidate for that post, Lael Brainard, named vice chair. And for more on all these moves here, I want to bring on Kevin Mond to kick us off in the back half of today's show, Kenyon Walsh, CIO. And Kevin, good to be chatting with you about this. I mean, a lot of people maybe expected it to happen, but now that it's out there and we're going to hear President Biden speak about it, what does it signal, I guess, to the markets, the Dow up today?
I mean, for the most part, Zach, I think it signals more of the same with respect to the Fed's overall TNT program, that being tapering, narrowing, and tightening. Having Chair Powell back in that seat for another 4 years tells us that in all likelihood, the Fed will continue to remain accommodative and look to continue to increase that pace of tapering through the second half of next year, likely start to shrink the size of their $8 trillion balance sheet, and then in all likelihood have at least one hike, perhaps two rate hikes of 25 basis points next year and another two 25 basis point rate hikes in 2023. So expect more of the same. But the key update here, the vice chair is now Vice Chair Brainard. So you could anticipate additional changes perhaps coming on the regulatory front as well. But in all likelihood, more of the same, and the markets greeted that relatively positively.
Yeah, and Kevin, it seems like at least looking at the market rate and seeing how significantly higher financials are up today, at least investors liking the fact that Lael Brainard in this new role won't necessarily be in charge of the bank regulation, which is why progressives initially really pushed for her, given her stance in the past.
That's correct. So there's been a lot of talk about potential revisions to Dodd-Frank or going back to the ways that Dodd-Frank was originally constructed. And it appears as though with Brainard in the vice chair role, we might not see too many of those changes coming in the near future. So in all likelihood, more of the same once again from the Federal Reserve. And we anticipate that being constructive for the markets and also being conducive of additional economic growth in the year ahead.
I was just kind of looking, we were talking consumer confidence numbers and what we've learned in some of those readings recently and the expectations for inflation, 7%. And when you kind of compare back to prior years, so one of the earlier ones to look back to would be 2008. Some people look at that as maybe a bad omen of where things could go in 2022. I mean, when you do think about what the Fed's been trying to do in terms of talking about inflation as just transitory, and we're going to get over it soon. If consumers continue to think that we are not in that reality, that inflation is going to stick around longer than they expect, I mean, what does that maybe do about what the Fed does in response? And then also, I guess, just kind of what you expect to see play out in the recovery.
Sure. You're talking to Zach, of course, the University of Michigan update in November for the Consumer Sentiment Index, which fell sharply. And that was largely due to investor concerns around rising and mounting inflationary pressure, specifically as it relates to energy prices, as Americans are now paying more at the pump than they have since October 2014. And gasoline prices themselves are up over 55% from a year ago. But despite all of that, the American consumer is still strong. And I'll just do a little teaser ahead for your e-commerce segment. In all likelihood, this will be another record holiday shopping season, as overall sales are expected to grow between 8.5% and 10.5% this year. And we expect another all-time record in sales, up over 12% in terms of Cyber Monday. So if I look ahead right now, I believe that the consumer is still strong, still willing to spend, perhaps a little bit more apprehensive given rising COVID cases. And that speaks to more opportunities in e-commerce and companies that derive revenues within the role they play in the e-commerce ecosystem, Zach.
So, Kevin, let's talk about how you play that strength. If it is about a very strong holiday shopping season, is it still about putting money behind these big names, whether that is a Walmart or an Amazon? Or are there some opportunities you think that maybe investors are overlooking a bit?
It's a great question, Akiko. And I think there are more benefits beyond just the traditional e-tailers, such as an Amazon or some of the traditional brick and mortar companies that have expanded their online footprint, like Walmart, as you suggest. Within our own e-commerce ecosystem trust here at Smart Trust, we attempt to identify some of those very opportunities, like a Stitch Fix or a 1-800-Flowers, even eBay or Etsy. There are other online providers that anticipate benefiting from this record holiday shopping season. But I don't think this is just a holiday shopping season story. This isn't just a hotbed. E-commerce continues to penetrate overall retail sales, and we anticipate it becoming one of every four purchases globally will be done online within the next 2 years. So that speaks to tremendous investment opportunities, not just on the retail side, but also in terms of the delivery companies, the credit card companies, the payment processors, the warehouses, the distribution centers, all these companies that stand to benefit from this growth in e-commerce that's going to show itself very strongly through this holiday shopping season, but likely continue for years to come.
Macro, though, Kevin, I mean, when you look at, kind of some of the sectors as we wrap up the year, it's been either been the longest year of your life ever, or it's been one that you really wanted to quickly put in the back of your mind. But when you look at maybe some of the leaders, you know, we've talked a lot about energy. You're talking about higher prices at the pump here. But we're also kind of looking at this fourth wave, and we're seeing lockdowns discussed in a lot of European countries now. And you wonder, I mean, oil prices have already come back a bit in just the last few weeks. I mean, I wonder what you look at as maybe the leaders outside of just the e-commerce strengths we've been talking about there on the retail side, but also kind of those macro sectors you're looking to for leadership in 2022, given the fact that, you know, growth has been up and down all year.
Yep. I think there are three areas that are going to provide leadership to this new American economy that's developing from the COVID-19 pandemic, which you correctly point out is not over, certainly not yet. And those areas are not only e-commerce, but also technology and healthcare, as there are many other rare and chronic diseases beyond COVID-19 that still need cures and still need therapeutics. And citizens across the globe are even more in tune with their healthcare needs as it stands now as a result of COVID-19. And on the technology front, in all likelihood, there's going to be some hybrid nature as it relates to how we work, how we shop, and how we educate our youth. And that speaks to a tremendous need for some of the revolutionary technology providers that allow for that type of remote work, remote teaching, and of course, remote shopping, whether it's cybersecurity, artificial intelligence, robotics, the blockchain. That's where we see the opportunities ahead. So it's healthcare, notably biotechnology, technology in the areas of the revolutionary technologies, and those same e-commerce ecosystem providers that I spoke about earlier. More upside is ahead, but investors are going to have to be a lot more selective to find those pockets of growth opportunities.
And Kevin, I'm surprised we've gone this long in a conversation without focusing specifically on the supply chain. It feels like every executive weighing in on this, and we've heard this on so many earnings calls, but the timeline for when this gets resolved seems to really have a pretty wide spectrum, anything from early 2022 to something this, you know, dragging on well into, you know, the second and third quarter of next year. How much of this do you think is overblown, and what's the base case that you're operating under?
I think a large majority, Kiko, of the supply chain issues that we continue to witness are due to labor supply shortages, because we're not necessarily in the midst of a underlying resource or product shortage. Where we have shortages are the ability to produce those products, the ability to transport those products, and the ability to ultimately put those products on the shelves and sell them to the end consumers. So the fact that we have a much lower unemployment rate as we stand right now than where we started this year, has come down by about 2.1% right now, is encouraging. But to get back to the 3.5% unemployment rate where we stood in March of 2020, prior to the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, which at that point in time was a 50-year low, even the Fed doesn't project this country will be at until the end of 2023. So some of these supply chain related issues, which are really just masking underlying labor supply shortage issues, are likely to persist. And because of that, investors would be wise to position their portfolios for the continuation of inflation. And I contend that some areas of inflation are indeed transitory and are related to the reopening trade, such as airfare and lodging, and then some of the semiconductor-related issues, which appear to be slowly abating, that are impacting new vehicle prices. But other areas aren't going to abate just yet, and investors would be wise to position their portfolios for those types of inflationary pressures.
Good advice there. Kevin Mann, Henny & Walsh CIO, appreciate you coming on here to chat with us again today.